I just finished the last chapter of the Dramatic Demonstration book. And now, granted, rough draft, right? So now I'm going to go through the work of going through each chapter, making sure everything flows correctly. I got a lot of images to finish finding or creating. And, you know, then I'll start working with an editor. And I'm sure there's grammar things every once in a while or whatever. But honestly, I got to tell you guys, this is really super fun. So I am trying to work on the preface of this book. You know what's so funny? One of the reasons this book took so freaking long for me to write, I've never written a book. And I kept getting stuck because I kept trying to create the table of contents before writing. And I don't know, I kept making it and making it. Like, I literally was, probably for a year, I just spent so much time. I was like, well, maybe it should be like this, maybe like this. Until finally one day I was like, duh, I'm just going to write the book. And then it's been better to go backwards and work on things like the table of contents, the introduction, conclusion, the preface, last. And I think I'm really glad I did it that way. Well, first, I don't know if the book would have come out if I didn't do it that way. But because that's what I kept getting stuck on. But it's actually really interesting. Russell told me as I was writing it, he's like, you know how you have all these epiphanies when you like prepare for stage and you're like putting your speeches together? I was like, yeah. And it's such a fun feeling. It's true. Every time you get on stage and you start preparing a speech, I love speaking on other people's stages. Might get a chance to go speak in Brazil soon. Kind of cool. But while you're preparing for a speech is one of the greatest places and sources that I get epiphanies. And it's one of the reasons I keep doing stage is, number one, I love it. And I think I'm pretty good on stage. But I also, it's where a lot of my learning comes from, because it's funny. A lot of people ask, can I help you put your speeches together? I'm like, no, never. That's where my insights come from, as I'm thinking about the clients or the customers or the audience, right? I'm thinking about their problem and I'm laying their problem out in front of me, and then I'm trying to come up with a solution and then tackle ways to frame the solution and then find proof and then, you know, proof from old marketers, proof from current marketers, my own stories, you know, and it's this dance, it's this molding, it's never... I don't know. I guess I'm just that way. I know some writers will go and they literally write their entire outline for their book and then they start writing it. But I feel like I do that work in my speeches. So I don't know. I guess it's, I am really excited. Guess what? I'm going to start working on the next book as soon as this one, you know, hits the ground. I already know it's going to be, it's going to be awesome. And go figure. I was like, oh my gosh, I have taught that topic a billion times on stage also now. So, it's funny. The reason I'm on this little walk right now and I've done this a couple times to try to just like chew on and germinate on my, on different chapters if I'm getting stuck on them. I talk it out. And a lot of times what I'm doing when I'm writing the book is I will just have my slide deck open and I'm like, all right, each speech I'm giving is the basis for a chapter. So I'm literally just using my slides as the outline. And that works really, really well, again, because I feel like I do the outlining thing for slides, but I don't know, every time I try to do it for the book, it just didn't work. So it was more like organizing the order of speeches I've given. I don't know if this is making sense, but anyway, I feel like I found my writing style, or at least how I get stuff out. So I am at about 50,000 words in the book right now. And now I'm working on the preface. Russell still has a couple chapters to write in it. But it's actually really exciting because it's giving me time to go. I don't want any of this waiting on me. So now I'm going to go, you know, kick the ball over to him. And now I'm working on the preface, and then time to go through images and working with an editor this next week to go through and crank out, you know, the next parts and stuff. So anyway, I'm, I'm excited. So I am walking around right now because I'm trying to come up with the preface of this book. And I've got a guy in mind that I'd like to write the foreword. So I'll reach out to him today and see if he wants to write the foreword for the book. Ooh, it would be super cool because he's kind of... not even kind of. He's a gigantic, freaking huge deal. So, anyway. So, the preface of this book. The preface of the Dramatic Demonstration book. I really want to open up with the argument in this that there's, you know, there's really no such thing as internet marketing. That marketing, you know, it's not like marketing existed because the internet came around. So, it's almost helpful to think about the internet marketing space as first just marketing, right? Break away the concept of marketing and study it from the context of the 1800s. And then when you go in and you add things in like the internet, you realize all the internet is just a gigantic distribution channel. And that was one of the biggest epiphanies I had when I first started studying all these rich dad marketers. How this all really came about was when I did this massive event in 2019. I had 650 people come to my event called OfferMind, and I was teaching offer strategy and my offer formula. And my offer formula came from, you know, bringing like 20,000 people through the One Funnel Away Challenge and started seeing the issues and the patterns that everyone was running into when they were creating their offers. They just had no formula. There's no frame. And so they just were like throwing this spaghetti against the wall and going, here's my offer. And I was like, well, there's actual principles behind offer creation though. And I'm not saying mine's the only way, but it is a way, right? And so I did this event. So 650 people came to the event. I think it was my third event ever that I'd done. And I was like, huh, I got something here. This is a lot of people. And they were in person here in Boise. And I did all this work to ask Russell if he would come keynote at that event. And when he came to the event, he came and he spoke. And then afterwards, we were hanging out backstage. This is literally why I got into the Rich Dad Marketer thing. Russell goes, we were hanging out backstage. And, you know, we sold, did pretty good. And backstage, Russell's like, he's like, dude, you're like all in on this offer thing. And it's such an awesome area for you. And this is so cool. He goes, have you ever studied Claude Hawkins? And I, you know, it's funny to say it. It's funny to say this now, but back then I had never heard of Claude Hawkins. He's like, you know who Claude Hawkins is? I was like, no. He goes, dude, Claude Hopkins was like the original offer guy. They used to call offers schemes, right? So they called him a scheme man. And Claude Hopkins was paid like $500,000 a year just to go help people develop their offers in like the late 1800s, early 1900s. He's like half the reason that the toothbrush market even exists. I mean, really interesting dude. And, you know, so the word scheme, now you think the word scheme and the word is, you know, closely associated with pyramid scheme, but you can think of where the word comes from, the scheme meaning offer. And so I started going deep into Claude Hopkins' life and the things that he had done. I was like, this is fascinating, you know? And that's where I started bumping into, you know, I had not, you guys are going to laugh at this, but a lot of my marketing education until that point had come just from, you know, doing it. I'm a very experiential learner. Some of you guys might be that way as well. I had studied Russell's stuff to death and then was his funnel dude, right? And so obviously that was obviously a complete baptism in marketing education. How could it not be? And then a lot of it was just from patterns I was just noticing and solutions I was trying to come up with for literally my clients at the time. And so as funny as it is, like I had never really dove into these old school guys, you know, like I start going to David Ogilvy, and then I start going, I was like, oh my gosh, rewind even further back, right? It's David Ogilvy. And then I'm looking at, you know, Albert Lasker, who literally invented orange juice to save the company Sunkist, you know, and then I'm studying more about, you know, I'm like, oh my gosh, P.T. Barnum. And then Hollywood comes out with that Barnum movie, which was very much made up, but, you know, it was good. And that's really what it came about. I start getting into P.T. Barnum stuff, and yeah, it's hard not to see how absolutely gigantically influential Barnum was, of course. And so I'm going through Barnum's material, and I remember it was the very beginning of the scamdemic, 2020, and I was just, not to be like, I don't know if this is too real, but this is exactly what was happening. I was going through my divorce, and I was now completely living on my loan, alone, so I was just sitting in a tiny little house that I rented by myself, and, you know, kind of bored, and like, what do I do with my time and my life and my woes, and I started listing every single one of P.T. Barnum's campaigns that I could find side by side on a whiteboard, and began comparing the first move that he would make in all of his marketing initiatives, and then the second move he would make in all of his marketing initiatives. It took me a long time. I laid out just like dot by dot. I was like, huh, in the Fiji Mermaid story, P.T. Barnum did this. Right, and he started going through, and then in the, you know, the Jenny Lind campaign, he did this, and then the Tom's Thumb campaign, he did this, right, then the Cardiff Giant, he did this, and then I started just listing all this stuff out, and it became very obvious that Barnum was following, or at least collecting, like a playbook, and I remember, I could take exactly where I was standing when this hit, you know, and when this epiphany hit. I remember Funnel Hacking Live was about to happen. No one really knew what was going on as far as the plandemic goes. I will die on that hill, by the way. And I remember, like, Russell was kind of nervous that they might get sick or something like that for, you know, if Funnel Hacking Live was coming up, and he's like, oh, we don't want to get sick. You know, we don't know what the sickness is that's going around the world and stuff like that. And so Marley and I go to drop off some stuff at his house, just some health things and, you know, stuff like that. And as we're literally dropping off this stuff to Russell, I'm handing Russell this, a box of just, you know, vitamin C and all this other stuff. to naturally combat and fight, you know, and prevent. Handing this box to Russell, standing on his back door, handing it to him. I was like, dude, I am finding some crazy cool crap about P.T. Barnum's life. And the dude had a launch model. And, like, if you just study his stuff in isolation, it's already interesting enough. But when you lay the stuff side by side, you start to see all these patterns. And as is very common for he and I, anytime we get together, it's usually a four hour marketing nerd sesh. We've done that so many times. You know, spent 4 hours just talking in his kitchen, or 4 hours talking in his home office, or 4 hours talking on the back porch, or a lot of times we're moving around his house as we're just rifling, you know. So I'm talking about this stuff with him, and we leave and say goodbye. Funnel Hacking Live happens, and then it was like mid-2020, it was like 6 months later, you know, Russell reaches out and he's like, dude, do you want to co-author a book together on what you were talking about with this Barnum stuff? And I was like, yeah, you know, like, absolutely. At that point, I had been teaching it already in my offer launch event, and the early versions of it. I'm so glad that we did not write the book, and that I did not write the book back then. It wasn't ready, and it was a little too deep, a little too nerdy. I still was kind of coming out of my belief that volume equals value, you know what I mean? And I'm so glad I didn't go put it out yet, because I needed some more brevity in my stuff. And if you've been following from me for any amount of time, you know, that's just part of my own journey. And anyway, so I had been teaching it, and I had done the first iteration of the teaching of it on stage to my own audience. I had 950 people come to that event and was using Barnum's formulas to sell the tickets about Barnum's formulas. And it was such an interesting, it was so fascinating to watch how just freaking well it worked, you know? And it only strengthened my resolve that there really is no such thing as internet marketing. Because we really didn't spend that much money in ads. And Barnum used ads like crazy, but at the beginning of his career, you know, he didn't use them as much as he did later on in his life. And I think it's a big thing to show. Like, you don't have to start with ads. And the formula allows for you to not if you don't have that kind of budget. But then, as soon as you can, turn on ads, right? So I was looking at this audience, and I was like, holy crap, 950 people. And, anyway. It was virtual. This is the scam damage that's going on. But still, I was like, wow, super cool. And that was probably about a year after I'd done the OfferMind event that was in person with 650 people. Anyway, so what happened is the next Funnel Hacking Live is coming up, and I'm continuing to refine how to teach this, and I'm continuing to refine and see deeper into the patterns. Once I kind of saw that I had something, that's when I think it was Funnel Hacking Live. I don't remember if it was 2021 or 2022. You know what? I think it's 2022. That's when Russell was like, well, I sent a message to him and I was like, dude, every time we worked on one of your Secrets Trilogies books, you know, whenever we saw that something existed that we could use, it's a little windy. Hopefully you guys don't hear that. But every time we saw that we had something for one of those Secrets Trilogies books, it's pretty common to just go throw an event so then you can start treating each chapter like a speech on stage, and then you get this live direct feedback from the audience that they don't realize it, but they're absolutely influencing and helping the things that go in the chapter or the things that get taken out of the chapter or the things you're just not good at explaining yet, or maybe more story was needed here versus there, you know, stuff like that. And it's one of the reasons I built my stage, by the way, is so that I could put people on stage, they could practice their book, and then we would write the co-author the book together, which is what we're doing right now. We call it the stage book, by the way. Go to thestagebook.com. You'll see what I'm talking about. We've got, I think, 12 authors we're doing that with now. But a lot of it has come from this experience. So anyway, 2022 happens, and it's where we kind of unveiled the first dramatic demonstration formula, and or at least unveiled it. And it was cool because it came out right at the time as Russell's linchpin model, and it just perfectly teed up the linchpin model, and really had to fuel and fill the linchpin model. It was also at that time when we were trying to figure out what to call it. It was not called Dramatic Demonstration back in the day. I can't remember what we called it or what I called it, but it was not nearly as elegant, that's for sure. There was, we called it, I wanted to call it something around the lens of, like, the original campaign formula, or, like, the campaign formula that, you know, used by rich dead marketers without the internet, you know, or how marketers got rich with their marketing strategies without using the internet, stuff like that. That was the kind of the concept, because one of the arguments I kept making in there was that Facebook and these ad platforms have absolutely destroyed the word campaign. Like, campaign does not mean a paid ad strategy. That's just what those guys started adopting and calling it as. And so it kind of lost, I feel like our world has lost what the original actual campaign was. And, you know, it's very easy to think that just means something that's paid. When really, if you think about like the term like political campaign, that's like a multi-phase, multi-month initiative. And that's more akin to what an actual marketing campaign is. The problem, you know, then Russell reached back and he's like, dude, the problem with calling it that though is that people think they know what it is and so they'll dismiss it. And so he's like, oh, well, we'll think through a name. And Russell was going through, I think it was something in Dan Kennedy. And Dan Kennedy had this phrase inside of one of his, something he'd written, and said the phrase dramatic demonstration. And Russell was like, oh my gosh, that's it. And so he went and he was like, oh my gosh, the domain's available. So he bought dramatic demonstration and that's how it got called the dramatic demonstration formula. So when we got on stage in 2022 together and did that co-speech together, it really was effective. We got to teach the original formula on what it actually was, but it's not actually what's in the book. As I got off the stage at Funnel Hacking Live 2022 with Russell, one of the things I recognized in there is that the formula was accurate, but it was still stuck in olden times. You know, so it's one of the reasons the book took a long time to come out. It's because I needed to, holy crap, it's so windy, guys. I'm so sorry. The book, the formula, the dramatic demonstration formula, needed to go through another round to modernize it so that people didn't think that they needed to do what P.T. Barnum did in order to be successful, meaning, you know, guys bringing elephants to America and doing circus parades across the Brooklyn Bridge, you know? So there was still like this, and you don't have to go do or be that big for a dramatic demonstration to work in your business. And that's not, you know, it's still about being dramatic. It's still about being loud, but it needed a little bit more modernizing. And so I messaged Russell and I was like, hey, there was one other piece. I want to go teach that formula again. I want to clean it up. But the real thing that I wanted to go do with this formula was to teach the style of messaging that Barnum always used in his dramatic demonstration. He wasn't using normal kinds of messaging. And I, for about 2 years by that point, had been playing with this hook formula that I was creating and ideating with my clients. And the pattern was that basically almost every time someone would go use this hook writing formula that I was kind of playing with and coming up with, almost every time they used it, their company would grow like crazy. And I was like, there's something to this messaging issue. There's something to this messaging formula. Right, and as I studied more Barnum stuff, it became really apparent that it's not just about the six steps of the dramatic demonstration. It's not enough just to do the six steps. This was like a seriously massive epiphany that came in. The dramatic demonstration formula is, yes, using the six steps, but what you're using in the six steps is this offer hook formula. And so it was mid-2022, and I asked Russell, I was like, dude, we got to teach this next part together. And that was about the time he asked me to come be the fractional CMO of ClickFunnels for a little while. And I started using the hook writing formula on Russell's projects. And I remember there were several in particular that we just had the hardest time coming up with a hook. And when we started pulling out this formula, the projects worked and worked well. And we realized that, that's when I realized it wasn't just about following the six steps. It was the messaging that you were using in the six steps. So that's why this book is really a combination of those two things. It's both about messaging and the order that you use the messaging in. And so I was like, we got to go teach this. So in 2023, Russell and I did another co-speech together at Funnel Hacking Live. And that was specifically about this offer hook formula that I had been using for, I think, 4 years by that point. And it was really interesting to watch that formula develop. We call it the offer hook, or I call it the offer hook. And the offer hook is, it's not a headline. It literally rewrote the formula for a hook. and clarified it. And so I think I've written over 100 of them for clients now. And literally, that's been the pattern. Every single time someone goes out and uses it, in the Barnum steps, bam, explosion. So again, that's why the book has, it's like 50% about these six steps, and it is 50% about a very unique style of messaging. Because the problem that we're seeing is that people are using the perfect webinar script as their hook. That's not what it was ever meant for. The perfect webinar script is a sales mechanism. It's not a marketing mechanism. It's for pitching. It's not for getting leads, right? And so this stuff has just been flying through my head for, I mean, literally since 2019. And just has been a massive, massive accelerant to the formula. I'm so glad. I sat down to try to write this book, I don't even know how many times, since 2019. And it none of it flowed in the way that it, by the time I actually sat down to write it, it kind of fell out in like 2 or 3 weeks. But it's because the pieces finally fit. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's the missing, that was it. And suddenly the whole book clicked, the formula made sense, and all these like living case studies happened. And it was effective. It was powerful. It worked. So anyway, 2023, Funnel Hacking Life happened. I taught the Offerhook formula. And that was the year, though, because we had taught the dramatic demonstration formula the year before. That was the year that I asked everyone in the audience. I think there's 5,000 people in that audience. And I was like, could you raise your hand if you actually implemented and did and have made money with the dramatic demonstration formula that we taught a year ago? I did not think that many hands were going to go up. And I was like, oh my gosh, this formula imperfectly has made millions of dollars for the market already. And I started going and interviewing mastermind members that were using it, and you know, different businesses in different categories, which I think is important to say. It didn't matter what industry someone was in, high ticket, low ticket, online, offline, digital, physical, it really didn't matter. It was the way that they used and treated and leveraged the platforms of the internet in a specific order that matches Barnum's order from the 1800s. Obviously, he didn't have the internet, right? But it's still the style of traffic that he was using, and in the very specific order that he was using it in, that made it work. So, and then you add in the key kind of method. What is he actually doing and saying on those platforms? Right, so and that was the Offerhook formula. Does that make sense? So I'm kind of giving like a little recap here, a little history lesson here on where this thing actually came from, because, you know, it's funny. Yesterday I posted saying, I just finished all the core chapters of the Dramatic Demonstration book, and someone was like, you've made us wait forever on this. I'm like, well, it actually wasn't, it wasn't ready. I thought it was. What really, really, really carried it across the finish line was in early 2024, Russell and I did, you know, I have an event studio in Boise, and we did a 3-day workshop, with just an invite only group of like 50 people, and taught top to bottom the entire formula, how to use it, the messaging, how to figure out which dramatic demonstration you should be using and should probably not be using, or at least not start with. It was there, right? I remember it was 3 days before that workshop, and I was preparing for the workshop, that I finally was able to see the very natural transition from the formula being stuck in the 1800s to modern days. And that's just what exploded it. So that's going to happen. And as I sat down, it was early 2024. I remember after that workshop ended, I was like, we have it. We've got it. So yeah, I sat down to start writing it multiple times from then. And I already told you, that's kind of where I kept trying to create a table of contents out of the slides, but I had to do one more iteration on everything So it's ready. This formula has undergone massive scrutiny. And I have absolutely welcomed and accepted my perfectionistic mentality in this to finally deliver something that I believe will literally solve the lead flow problems that people are having, right? So one of the opening premises of the book is, like I was saying before, that there's really no such thing as internet marketing. There's only marketing, and then there's the internet. And you should really learn about the two separately, right? Strip away the internet, just study marketing and what it is at its core. And then, you know, it doesn't really matter what platforms change or update. You know, if you think about it, I mean, you and I both know the internet is going to continue to change. Like, the platforms are going to change. I once heard, I think it was back in like 2018, Google's algorithm back then self-updated more than once a day. You know what I mean? Like, it's crazy to think that you're only ever going to need one platform, or that one platform will, like, it's going to stay the same forever. I mean, rivers dry up, you know? They might grow for a long time, and if, you know, you can learn how to feast off of them and get rich from them and get sales from them. But to throw all eggs in the basket on a single traffic source forever with the expectation that things won't change is ridiculous. Change being the only constant, that's just not a smart expectation to have as a marketer, right? So the book is not actually at all about entrepreneurship. The book's not about funnels at all. We talk about those things in there, but what the book is really about is marketing and the role of marketing. And what people can expect from this book is, you know, imagine you hire someone on your team to be a marketer. 99% of the clients that I work with often don't know how to train that person. And it's really, really hard to offload the roles and responsibilities from the original entrepreneur into the head of another person with any degree of confidence, because it's become so hard to separate studying Facebook versus actual marketing. Or, you know, my YouTube video needs to be 10 minutes instead of 14 minutes. Instead of actual marketing. Like, those are tactics, they're not marketing. And so what you have today is all of these quote-unquote internet marketers who really don't understand messaging and are confusing learning how a platform algorithm works with what internet marketing actually is, or marketing in general, right? So you learn the two separately, and any marketer who doesn't actually understand messaging, especially in the way that this book teaches, I would contend, and I'm sure I'll get some rocks thrown at me, they're not real marketers. What they are is posters, right? They're content schedulers. And a lot of people who are saying they're internet marketers are really just scheduling content, thinking that it's the...
Hey, I hope you're enjoying the episode. Let me interrupt for just 1 minute here. One time I was speaking on the stage at this event, this guy picked up a microphone and he said, "Steve, when do Facebook ads begin paying off?" And I remember looking confused and just asking back, like, "What do you mean?" He repeated the question and said, "Well, we've been spending a lot of money on Facebook ads for a long time now, and we're just wondering when this begins to all pay off, when we actually start making money from the ad." I said, "Wait, Facebook ads are not an investment. They don't pay off someday. This is direct response marketing. So if we don't get a payoff within the first few days, we turn off the ads. How much money have you spent?" I will never forget the look at this guy's face as he realized he had the completely wrong mindset about ads. And he said, "We've spent over $250,000 without any return on ads at all." My stomach fell out of my body. Look, this is direct response marketing, meaning we measure the direct response of our marketing. That's why ads are the holy grail of marketing. They're not an investment that pays off someday, sorry colleges, because every dollar spent on ads should return with another dollar very soon. That's what my good friend John Parks and I are doing the Chief Ads Officer Workshop on May 15th through the 17th. John has spent over $150 million in Facebook ads profitably and manages the ads accounts for some of the biggest names out there. John is going to take 50 business owners through his unique Facebook ads process while you follow along. At the end, you're going to have your own account running. I simply asked John to show us what's working best today in the ads world right now. John told me that one of the hardest parts of running ads today is finding the right person to do it. Traditional org charts don't really have a spot for the ad buyer, so this workshop will help you install a new role, whether in-house or if you go higher, the new role of chief ads officer inside your business. This workshop is both for those who want to learn ads themselves or for those who want to learn to communicate with their media buyer better. The workshop is only happening one time in person in my event studio in Boise, Idaho, May 15th through the 17th, and all the details are at chiefadsofficer.com. Go to chiefadsofficer.com right now to save your seat and get more details. We can't wait to see you there. Let's get back to the episode. About omnipresence, you know. I think one of the reasons it feels like it's gotten harder in the last couple years is because before 2020, you could thrive online by just being omnipresent. You know, half the time, it didn't matter what kind of messaging I was putting out there, as long as I was consistent. You know, like I didn't spend near as much time making specific crafted messaging as I do now. You know, we used to take one video after I left working for Russell in 2017, I spent the next 2.5 years putting up a video every day, well, Monday through Friday. And then we would take that video and we would strip out the audio, and that was the podcast. And then we would transcribe it, and then that was the blog. And then we would take an image from the video, and that was, you know, a still image on Instagram. And then we'd take out this is before shorts existed. Oh, no, it's not. We would take out a small piece of the video, and that was the short. And that worked because we were just, you know, literally by the time, every day we would take one video and we would repurpose it to 17 platforms. It cost me $20,000 a month to do. It involved 5 different content agencies where one agency would pick up the ball, they would do their bit, and they would tag in the next person. And yeah, we were taking one piece of content and repurposing it to 17 platforms every day for 2.5 years. And it worked. My list exploded. My sales went nuts. It certainly cemented me, and I know that. But in 2020, that's really where all these internet platforms started getting smarter. All right. 2020 was when, I mean, there's a lot going on in the world, but besides that, 2020 was when, I mean, machine learning and AI already existed well before the public even knew about it or ever could use it, or well before social media platforms were using it. But that really was the year when social media platforms started making their platforms smarter using all this AI and machine learning. And so, think about it like this, right? In all the years of human history and evolution, the internet has only been publicly available since 1991. I wasn't even born yet. Right? Within our lifetimes, think about how much stuff has changed. The fabric of human history is never going to be the same because of all this tech, right? So, which is also why I like to study these rich dad marketers. Like, how did you guys do without the things that we consider to be non-negotiables, right? And that's where my obsession came from. I'm like, oh my gosh, Barnum was the second millionaire in America and sold tickets to his museum for like cents. You know, that dude understood some things about driving volume and did not have near the reach that we did. You know what I mean? Like, pretty quickly out of the gate when he really was a nobody. It's like, what does that dude understand about platforms? What does that guy understand, you know, meaning old school platforms, offline methods that we can use to influence today's marketing decisions and not feel so victimized
by any change or any update that's happening, because we also know that that's also the only constant. That's what's going to happen anyway, right? So we got to be a little more bulletproof in our strategy and in the way we think about marketing, because to change everything. I can't tell you how many people reach out to me every time there's a brand new platform, and they're like, Steven, you guys remember when Clubhouse was a thing for like a hot second? I can't, so many people reached out. Steven, should I be on Clubhouse? Right? Then the next one comes out. Steven, should I be on X? Right? It'll rebrand or whatever. Whatever the new thing is. Should I be on this? Should I be on this? Should I be on this? And it causes like anxiety, overwhelm for so many people because they just don't know. They don't have a strategy that makes them a little more platform agnostic. And the dramatic demonstration formula helps you become far more bulletproof to whatever changes the internet goes through. And is one of the major reasons why the book is so heavily about old school methods, because I actually contend that they understood marketing more than we do. What we have access to, and they had to be better at messaging because the distribution was so much weaker back then. But we got all these ways to reach each other now, and you know, I'm not calling marketers lazy, I'm just calling us that we have been coddled and don't need as much strategic message planning because it's so easy just to blast something, right? By virtue of volume that we have access to, we haven't had to have as much messaging figured out. But that's starting to tilt back the other way, right? Like really, we have been first movers in the internet. You know, they always have those bell graphs. Like when I was in school, they show the bell graphs. Here's the early adopters, right? And then here's the early majority and here's the late majority. You know, those bell graphs that show the adoption rate of a new product or industry. Well, that's actually what humanity has been blessed with. If you were, you know, humanity itself has been an early adopter and a first early adopter on the freaking internet. And it's funny to kind of recognize that and be like, oh, humanity itself, all of us have been and have been taking advantage of the sales scenario online as an early adopter. And as we start to figure out as a humanity, you know, what the internet really is and how to shift and change it, how to use it. I mean, of course the platforms are going to change. It's still learning how to use us also, right? We're using this tech and it is definitely using us, and it's a ever expanding relationship. And so why wouldn't those platforms continue to change? And now we add AI into the mix, and it's like, I'm sure it's updating far more than every, you know, updating itself more than a day, each day. So you kind of see what's happened. I'll say it kind of like this. I think that an entrepreneur could use the internet in general for sales for the first 30 years of its existence simply by being present, you know. And now the internet is basically saying, hey, we're still here to reach tons and tons of people, but you can't just like toss your crap on there anymore. Messaging has to be more finely tuned. It's funny how many people have gotten angry at this sentence, but it's true, right? There's really no such thing as a traffic issue. The whole internet, I'm sorry, the whole world is not even on the internet, right? You don't have a traffic problem. Traffic's there, and it's there in by the billions. And the internet is still being adopted by the rest of humanity. And a lot of the internet users don't even have streaming speeds. You know what I'm saying? And so to think that there is a traffic shortage or I'm having a leads problem is just completely categorically false. What you have is a mismatch. There's a missing bridge literally between tapping into near infinite traffic and your product. And what most entrepreneurs have been doing that's wrong, and it's why they're having a leads issue, is they just continue to be louder and louder and louder using their product as the object to get people's attention with. But if you study like simple sales, whether it's modern or old, if you study simple marketing strategies or copywriting, whether it's new, modern, right, or old, you don't sell something, you don't get somebody's attention by using your product. You get somebody's attention with a specific type of messaging. It's how you talk about stuff. And so you got all these entrepreneurs wondering why people are getting offended, or just like, you know, an entrepreneur will kill themselves making something absolutely incredible and something I've never seen before. And they think that everybody else has the same passion. And so they go out and they blast it all over the place. They blast it all over the internet. And they're like, how come I'm not getting that many people coming to me? It's because you're literally leading with the wrong thing. And what this book will go through is that bridge. It will bridge the gap between near infinite traffic online and your offer without using your offer as the reason to get people's attention, right? Your offer is not the bridge. It's messaging, right? The way you tap into the internet traffic that exists all over the place is a very specific style of messaging. It's the offer hook, right? And using the offer hook in the order that P.T. Barnum used, you know, back in the day. So that's kind of the preface of the book. That's what it's really about. And implementing this with companies has been really fun to watch their lead gen explode. It's been fun to watch. There's so many examples throughout this book of tons of actual real life offer hooks that I've written for clients. There's examples throughout this book of dramatic demonstrations pulled off in both old times and in modern times using this formula. Inside the book is how to plan and literally calendar your dramatic demonstration and make it so that it's a repeatable asset. This book absolutely uses the power of the launch, but in a way that has never really been taught. But and because of that, it also does it in a way that you don't get stuck in the launch model. This book is not about how to get stuck in a launch model. That's probably been one of the biggest concerns I've heard from people as I've taught more and more about this, is they're like, that's really cool, but I'm already stuck. I already feel like I'm in the launch hamster wheel, Steven. So are you saying that now I got to go do an even bigger launch and an even larger thing? And further keep myself stuck in my business? No. One of the biggest epiphanies that I had while going so deep in Barnum's life is that Barnum, funny enough, also got stuck in the launch model. Is one of the reasons he brought Jenny Lind to America. So picture this. And this is also good to preface with this book. Barnum got stuck in the launch model. Right? He did survive for the early parts of his career on these one-off gimmicks, and he was very good at them. You know, he goes out and he kind of announces himself to the world with the Fiji mermaid stunt, and no one really knew who he was. I mean, he wasn't a nobody, but he wasn't P.T. Barnum, you know what I mean? He goes out and he does this big Fiji mermaid stunt, gets the attention of a massive part of the U.S., and cements himself as kind of a hoaxman. And he was not the only hoax man. Hoax is what they used to call for like a public stunt. It's like a joke you play on the public. And the public, after a while, kind of learned about this. There was other people doing these hoaxes to the public, and the public would kind of play along with it. And it's one of the reasons why he also, you know, was successful, is the public was like, yeah, let's participate in this with you, right? So he wasn't, I want to preface also that he wasn't being mean to the public, or he wasn't doing things that were, you know, unethical for the time, because he was literally giving these people a And he's giving him entertainment. He was not the only hoaxman. There's a lot of hoaxmen out there. And so he goes out and he plays this hoax on the public. And he gets so good at it, he continues to do that over and over and over again. Well, several years into Barnum's career, he kind of starts to feel, this is really about the time of Jenny Lind, he got tired of the public looking at him as only a hoaxman and a jokester. And so he's pretty rich by this point, and very well known. And he's like, you know what? If I bring Jenny Lind over to America, somebody who is a prominent figure, someone who's more professional and pristine, right? I bet I could use my skill set to sell a bunch of tickets out to her concerts, but also remove some of the stigma that I'm only a hoaxman. And that was absolutely part of his motive for doing this with Jenny Lind. He didn't want to just be doing these little one-off things, and he didn't. He used his skill set. They sold out like 90 shows. And he started, I'm going to talk about this later on in the book. It's actually one of the last chapters. The concept of repeatable marketing, right? A lot of us think there's only two. Well, it's a live launch or it's an automated launch. That's not true at all. There's one in the middle called repeatable. And I think Barnum, I mean, this is the historians that I confirmed this. Barnum was one of the first pioneers really in repeatable marketing models. Until his time, pretty much everybody just survived on these one-offs, right? There wasn't really repeatable marketing, and there certainly wasn't persistent marketing campaigns stretched across a period of time. He really was Barnum that pioneered all this stuff. And so what's funny is that was like towards the middle of his career-ish. That was towards the middle of his career. In like 1850s. And then it was about 1865. 1865, Barnum, his museum burns down in New York. And he took it as a sign, basically, and he tried to retire. And he got so freaking bored in retirement. And he was like, I don't want to do this. I'm not going to retire. He's like, I hate this. He's like, I got so much energy still. It's ridiculous. So that's actually when he started his circus business. By partnering with others who are already in that industry, which is already a key too. And he's like, I'm going to use my skill set in the circus area, and we're going to go create a traveling circus. But what was different about his style from like the middle of his career to the end of his life was he created these marketing machines that would operate while literally autonomously and remotely in different cities and states while he was still just hanging out in his headquarters in New York. And so the book is not a book on how to get stuck in the launch model. The book is absolutely studying a very unique, very powerful launch method that he absolutely pioneered. But then the end of the book focuses on repeatable models that you learn and train. And he was doing this analog, right? This is before like all this technology and stuff. So we often look at P.T. Barnum as the greatest showman. But what I encourage people to remember about Barnum is that he was not definitely the beginning of his career, he was definitely the greatest show once man. And he would just continue to do a big demonstration over and over and over, right? Big dramatic demonstration. I mean, he himself was like, oh my gosh, that takes a lot of energy. And the book ends about Barnum being, the greatest consistent showman or the greatest persistent showman or the greatest automated showman, if you will. He absolutely was a systems and processes thinker. And I actually found he was so good at it by the time he got to his circus business that the US military even studied Barnum's circus methods to increase their own efficiency. Because you'll read about it later on in the book on why this thing was so impressive to even the US military. He had this thing down like crazy. Okay, systems, processes, leverage, okay, delegating, handing off to other people. So yes, take this book and learn the launch model. Take this book and learn the messaging that you use in the launch model. But don't at all think that this it stops there. In fact, you've actually not, in my mind, completed the dramatic demonstration formula until you've gone through what we call the traveling demonstration. And it's the one that learns to go do what you did without your direct involvement. And of course, Barnum kept his finger on the pulse of all of it. You know, he often, when he was in his headquarters in New York, later on in his life, he had teams of people running these things for him. And he was involved in the original one, and he was involved in pioneering it, but it was the way that he would go offload the responsibilities to other people and train them and create systems and processes that made it so that he literally would just go. He pretty much just helped write copy after that. He would write copy in New York and, you know, he'd be creating more strategic relationships with people and, you know, attending some things. But he was in New York while his business was quite literally on a railroad as a circus. And so I think that's a really important part to remember with this is that I don't want anyone to think that I'm telling them when they read this book. The word dramatic demonstration does not mean launch hamster wheel. Okay, it's a unique style of launching your product in a very specific order that gets the most amount of your market's attention as possible, but then also creates a model for what you do after the launch, right? Literally the day after a launch, what our industry tends to do, and I'm guilty of it, I've done it, right? And I feel like it's been really fun to study more of Barnum's stuff because I'm like, oh yeah, no, I definitely have gone through what this is saying, right? It takes a lot of work to go do a launch. It's actually a lot less work now that I follow his model, but it's still work, you know? A lot of times the day after launch, as business owners and entrepreneurs and marketers, we kind of like, whew, you know, let the hair down and kind of like take a big old exhale, and that's great, right? But that's actually not what Barnum did. Rest, right? I'm not telling you to burn yourselves out, right? Rest. But what he usually did after that, literally the day after, he was busy learning lessons, creating systems, capturing the processes so that it could become something that was repeatable and literally create a traveling demonstration. I have to confirm this, but he was at least among the first ever to kind of have like this in-house marketing team. You know, he's like, all right, I'm going to go hire myself a PR agent, a bunch of copywriters. I'm going to go get, you know, and train kind of like an internal group that he, of course, would control, but was still operating autonomously. So anytime you see someone who's stuck in the launch model, I just think about the last chapter of this book now. And I'm like, that's just the missing piece. You got to slow down. You got to slow down being so launch happy long enough to make it something so it's a repeatable asset. And the book is not about how to burn out in the launch model. The book's highlight, and really, I mean, half of it is definitely about this very unique launch method and model, because it'll make your launches easier and more attainable because they're so specific. You know, I think one of the hardest parts about launching today is that you kind of don't know when enough is enough, or it can kind of feel like it's just the, you know, I'm going to keep doing this until death do I part. And that sucks, man. And it's so funny, man. I'm kind of the Energizer Bunny, and I thought, I'll never burn out. I totally burnt out. I absolutely, without question, burnt out. That was probably around 2020, where it just hit me hard. There's a lot going on in my personal life too, but I absolutely business-wise did burn out. And a lot of it was because I was just on this hamster wheel. I mean, it was just exhausting, right? And I was like, I have to have ungodly energy to keep this model up. Well, yeah, it's not the full model. And by studying these rich dead dudes from the 1800s and 1900s, really Barnum specifically, because he's kind of the one that pioneered all this stuff, you actually learn how to transition. It's number one, how to do a more effective and efficient launch that doesn't just destroy you and is actually based in leverage, right? And then, number two, what you do with it afterwards so that it's, you know, it's funny, man. So many people ask me, how many dramatic demonstrations should I be doing? I was like, can you just do one? Just focus on one. That's what I want people to take from this book. Just do one of these things. And then focus on the traveling demonstration. Right? Get that cranking before you ever go out and create another flavor of one. So we're going to use examples. Like, webinars are still amazing. There's still some of the coolest dramatic demonstrations. Challenges are still some of the best dramatic demonstrations. Events is by far my favorite dramatic demonstration. Like a live in-person event, right? Summits, VSLs. I mean, it's all demonstrating what you do, how you can help the customer. It's about getting their attention in a very unique way that they're kind of already pre-sold before you show them the offer. You're going to learn about that. And then it goes back into, what do we do with this thing to make it so it's more automated, right? Just go do one dramatic demonstration. Any marketing method or strategy you have ever heard of, this is also one of the biggest epiphanies I saw while going through this stuff so deeply, was any marketing method you've ever heard of still works if the offer hook is right, and if you've done within this book. It's so funny when people would be like, but webinars aren't working. I'm like, then you're doing it wrong. Challenges aren't working. Then your challenge sucks, right? Or you're getting the wrong people in it. There's so many variables. You can't just throw out the whole method, right? There's so many. Webinars are dead. Funnels are dead. No, you just suck at them, all right? I still use funnels. They still work. And, are people still on the internet? Then I can use it for marketing, right? What matters is if you're following the formula, because making one post on Facebook is not a launch. All right, going out and doing a podcast like this is not a launch. It's not based on the channels that you have access to or the channels that you're using. Zoom out. It's based on how you're using and coordinating them. There's a section of the book that is focused on multi-channel campaigns, and really, also Barnum also pioneered that. People would pretty much stick to whatever they were using. Like, if they were putting newspaper articles out in the 1800s, they just kind of would put newspaper articles out. Barnum was kind of that first guy who was like, I got this museum downtown. How about I go do a little baby stunt so I can get something in the newspaper? And at the same time that goes out, I'm going to put gaslit banners and posters and signs on the rooftops of people's houses. And at the same time, I'm going to have like a street performer doing something weird in front of the museum. And at the same time, I'm going to go and run an ad that actually says I'm a fraud, which he would do a lot, just to get people looking at him. And at the same time, ... That multi-channel approach towards marketing really was Barnum's doing. Just like knock people's socks off. So anyway, that's what the book is about. It is about how you use a very specific style of messaging, and it's not your sales message. It's not your origin story. It's nothing in the perfect webinar script, and it's why people's messaging sucks right now. You're leading with a sales message in a marketing channel. It's a mismatch. Of course it doesn't work. All right, so it's funny, I'll go and I'll start auditing people's copy a lot of times, and I'm looking at it, I'm like, why are you selling on your marketing channel? I'm not saying you can't ever, right? But if it's like the thing you do all the time, it's like someone who continually knocks at the door day after day after day and just says, ready to buy, ready to buy, ready to buy, ready to buy. Of course they're gonna eventually never answer the door. And that's what's happening to people. They have a messaging problem, right? Traffic is a messaging formula. Lead gen is a messaging formula. There's no shortage of traffic or leads. You're just not tapping into them. Okay. And then once you know how to get their attention, what's the step-by-step, six-step formula that you use from Barnum's life to orchestrate? And it doesn't need to take months. It really doesn't. You can do that if you want to. But there's short demonstrations as well, right? Like timeline-wise. What do you do? What specific order to use these channels that are available to us today to cause the most amount of sales-based attention coming to you. And then in this book, it's funny, a couple days ago, I got a message from, time's messed up. I guess it was a couple months ago. My head's been so deep in this project, I kind of forget where time is. But a couple months ago, Russell reached out and he's like, dude, I have found a way to make the perfect webinar script shorter and easier for people to just grasp. He's like, I think I'm going to use this book to teach it and share it. And so the perfect webinar script is about sales. And so we do talk about that in this book too, because you have to know what you should be doing on the day of your dramatic demonstration. So a lot of it is about the buildup, how do you get people to the dramatic demonstration. And then a part of the book is about what you do on the day of the dramatic demonstration. And then the last part of the book is about what you do to make it a traveling demonstration and literally teach the machine to not need you. So that's what the book is. As I've applied this formula to people, my clients, and customers, my mastermind, the people that work with me, it's been fascinating to watch what happens, not only to lead flow, but a marketer's ability to elevate above just being inside of the launch hamster wheel and become like a true business owner. You know, if you don't have a system, you're the system. You know, if you want to be, that's fine, but you're not scalable, the systems are, you know. Anyway, if you guys want to get on the waiting list for the book, I'm going to go finish the last few chapters of this thing, and then go to dramaticdemonstrations.com, get on the waiting list. That's where, you know, we'll let early access things happen. It's where all the cool stuff's gonna happen. Go to dramaticdemonstrations.com. It's plural, dramaticdemonstrations.com. And get on the waiting list. We'll start throwing little cookies out there. And I got my chat with the editor this next week. So, man, 5-year long project. I can't even tell you how good it feels to be at this stage of it. Just, it has been an absolute grind and labor of love. All right, you guys are awesome. And if you could let me know what you think about this podcast, that would be amazing. I'm going to go right. Last month, I had 63 people in a workshop at my event studio, and I was just trying to get to know the audience. And so I said, raise your hand if you feel confident in your funnel. I expected half the room to say yes, half the room to say no. Literally nobody raised their hand. It got me thinking, if you're not confident in your sales funnel at all, what marketing are you actually willing to do? Probably zero. When I'm confident in my sales funnel, I naturally market harder and more loudly. So back by popular demand, I'm actually doing the Build Your Perfect Funnel 5-day challenge. All the details and registration is actually at buildyourperfectfunnel.com. The first time I did this challenge in 2022, I had over 3,000 people register, and it took it as a sign that people are not loving their funnel, but they also know that it's an essential part of internet business today. In the Build Your Perfect Funnel challenge, I'm actually going to show you how to build your perfect funnel. Of course, yes. But I'm also going to show you all the stuff that supports the funnel and makes it work after you've created it. I'm going to show you everything from choosing the two funnels that every business needs, something I call the warm traffic whisper launch, the infinite leads from red ocean strategy. I actually hate blue ocean strategies. They're a million times harder. It's easier to build funnels for red oceans. My fortune follow-up sequence, which is responsible for over half my sales. I'll teach you how a funnel works in a dramatic demonstration, offer hooks, brand hooks, market origin stories. I'll teach you cart open and close strategies, as well as how I choose what kind of upsells and downsells should be inside the funnel. Guys, I'm going to share with you everything I've learned over the years to launch immense amount of funnels online, both for myself and for big names. This is a 5-day virtual challenge with yours truly, straight from my stage. But you can watch from the comfort of your own home or literally around the world. So whether you're starting from scratch or looking to elevate your business, go grab a seat at buildyourperfectfunnel.com. And having a dependable funnel is the one thing holding entrepreneurs back right now. Go to buildyourperfectfunnel.com right now to register, and be sure to get a copy of my top 5 producing funnels from the last 10 years of my funnel journey. Again, that's buildyourperfectfunnel.com. I'll see you there.